Good morning. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Hannah Colton. Public charter schools play an important and often controversial role in our education system. A charter school can tailor its program to meet students' individual needs, even while the system as a whole can exacerbate inequalities between public schools. Do you or someone you know work or go to a charter school or a traditional public school? How did that go? Phone lines are open this hour. Give us a call. It's 277-5866. That's in the 505 area code. You can also email in your comment at letstalk@kunm.org. I want to welcome to the show by phone Danielle Johnston, a former member of the Public Education Commission, which makes decisions about the opening and closing of state chartered schools. Good morning, Danielle. Also joining us by phone is Patricia Gibson, the current chair of the PEC. Good morning, Patricia.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show. So less than a tenth of New Mexico students attend charter schools. I just want to get that number out there off the top. But it is one of those issues that takes up a huge amount of air politically. And we're going to talk about some charter school related legislation this hour. But first, just for some definitions, Patricia, what is a charter school? Can you just give us the basics?
Well, a charter school is in New Mexico, it is a public school authorized either through the state or through a local district. And by statute in New Mexico, it must be serving a specific, unique need in the community that they are going to open.
Mm-hmm. And it cannot, by state law, be operated by a for-profit company, right?
Oh, absolutely not.
Mm-hmm. And tuition-free public, like you said. And another sort of unique thing about New Mexico's charter schools is that they're mostly run by local organizations and networks, right? Whereas in other states, they're run oftentimes by bigger companies or networks. Is that about right?
Well, I would actually take out the word network out of New Mexico completely. You are correct that they are operated by local governance councils, but we do not have networks in New Mexico.
Okay, so local organizations running New Mexico charter schools for the most part. So say I'm an aspiring charter school director. I've got my new education model all sort of planned out. Patricia, what are the steps, just briefly, in getting a new charter school approved by the PEC, say?
Sure. In January, any individual who wants to open a charter school must send a notice of intent to the state and also to the local school district that they may be opening in. Then they undergo a fairly rigorous training process to complete the application, and the PED runs the trainings. So in June, the schools submit their applications. After the applications are submitted, they undergo a very rigorous review done by outside reviewers. In July, we do community input hearings in the community that they are going to open in. And then in August, the PEC meets to take the vote whether they will open the school or not. And then the whole following year, the school undergoes an implementation year in which they meet once a month at least with representatives from all aspects of PED assessment budget and so on in order to get ready to open the school.
Okay, thanks. And Danielle Johnston is also on the line. Good morning, Danielle.
Good morning, and I apologize. We lost connection, but I'm back now.
No worries. And you're a former PEC commissioner and also a former charter school head, right? So could you say a bit about what it takes to start a successful charter school?
Certainly, I can give you my thoughts on it. Commissioner Gibson outlined the process for a state chartered charter schools.
Right.
Those are the charters who apply outside of the school district. And it's a very rigorous process that the commission has worked on intently. The time that I was on the commission, we worked on this process, and it's a really good, strong beginning process. If, by the same token, if I determine that I would like to think about starting a charter and I'm looking within a district, then much of this work that was just described is done simply within the district, the application, the approval, all of it's more of an internal process. APS has a number of district charter schools who work very successfully within their district. My thought would be, and it's probably the most difficult, is when you start a charter, it's like, I think of it much like district consolidation from years ago, in that you're starting a school district. You're sort of consolidating, and you're asking the taxpayers in the state and the members of the district and the members, if it's the state charter, the people around the state, to understand that you'll be handling their dollars and working with their children. And so finding people with traditional school experience is pivotal in assisting and providing support to anyone who's opening a charter. That is my thought about the very beginnings of the process, because it is rigorous. And in my experience on the commission and in working with other charters as a charter school head, often people are new to the system because they're looking at innovative ways to try to educate, and they don't have that depth of knowledge that's really needed to begin that application process.
We're talking about charter schools this morning. You can call into the program. It's 277-5866 if you're in the 505 area code. Outside that, you can call 1-877-899-5866. We do have some comments rolling in by email this morning. I want to bring one in from Dwayne, who says he's a APS teacher and parent. Dwayne sent us an email today to say that charter schools in New Mexico have an unfair funding advantage over public schools. He says some say they're public schools, but they take applications and they may send students with behavioral or academic challenges back to public school. Dwayne also says there's nothing charter schools can offer that can't be done in public schools with adequate funding. I want to put that set of concerns to Patricia. What do you think?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what the individual refers to in terms of unfair funding, because charter schools are funded in the exact same way as any other public school is. And based on how lease reimbursement is done, they actually have to take about 40% of their operational money into helping pay for the lease. So I would say that there is an inequity in the opposite direction in terms of funding. So I can't respond without a little more clarification beyond that. Charters are public schools, and I agree that much of what charters could do could be done in a traditional public school. I think community members are feeling that it is not, and why the need for the charter school arose. But I'm really trying to present the narrative that we're all in the same, we all have the same goal. We're looking to do what's best for students in New Mexico. And if the parents in the community feel that it is a charter school that best serves that need, then that's what I will support.
Thank you for that. Well, I want to welcome another guest. We have in the studio Jackie Baldwin, Executive Director and Principal of Siembra Leadership High School here in Albuquerque. Good morning, Jackie.
Good morning, Hannah. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. So Siembra opened in 2016 and part of the Leadership Schools Network here in Albuquerque, chartered to Albuquerque Public Schools, right? Can you talk about what it's been like getting this school off the ground in the last few years?
Sure, absolutely. So we're a very young charter. We're in our third year now. We'll go into our fourth year next year and have our first graduating class. I can tell you a little bit about what's very special and unique about our schools, and that's that we target young people that aren't successful in traditional schools. So I can say that 70% of our young people come to us already have dropped out of high school or not on track to graduate. I can tell you that my specific population that I'm working with, I can tell you that we have 82% Latino students, 7% Native American students, 10% African American students. And again, we're targeting young people that are not successful in traditional systems. And we're saying that we want to provide a different experience for them because we know that just in Albuquerque alone, we have a 68% rate of young people that are not graduating. So going back to the idea of opening a charter school, this is my second go around. So I've been a part of the opening of Health Leadership High School and now Siembra. And really what you're doing is working with the challenging demographic, trying to give them the very best quality education. And it's like building the plane while you're already in the air. So you're building out systems and structures while the kids are already there at school. This is by far some of the most challenging work that I've ever done. Certainly the most rewarding. I also have a background coming from child welfare, so I have that kind of experience to play off of it too.
This legislative session, sure. When we're talking about education, of course, the Yazzie Martinez education ruling comes up a lot. And that's the state is under this court order to essentially better serve students who are Native American, who come from low-income backgrounds, who have disabilities. The students that you're saying Siembra make up the majority of Siembra's population. So what is the difference that a good public school can make in those students' lives? I mean, can you give us an example or an anecdote?
Absolutely. So having worked with this population in a charter school setting for about the past 5 years, I think the most rewarding and biggest piece is hearing the family narrative over and over again. So having grandparents, mothers, fathers come to you and say, you know, my kid was in a larger public high school and they weren't getting any credits and I'm worried about them dropping out. And since they've come here and had that sense of community and family and connection, that they feel tied to a school and they're now getting credits and they're now graduating and they're now having internships and they're now having dual enrollment experiences at CNM and UNM, which is huge.
So soon here, we're going to have a lawmaker on the phone who is working on some big education proposals. And one of those would phase out small school size adjustment funding for charters. So it's kind of a jargony phrase, but mm-hmm. basically the funding that smaller schools get in the funding formula to help them out. It would phase that out for charters like yours that operate within a large district. Mm-hmm. So how would that affect Siembra? What would that mean for your program?
Sure. So just I can give you the numbers, the rundown of the numbers. This phase out that is proposed to happen over the next 3 years, what it would look like for our school next year is a cut of $186,000 for my kids, which is 11% of my budget. The second year of the phase out, it would be a cut of $419,000, 21% of my total school budget. In the last and final year of the phase out, it would be a cut of $651,000. To my budget, and that's 28% of it. You mentioned the Yazzie case, and I wanted to state that I have spent my entire career working with the young people that the Yazzie case is designed to protect, right? I was actually a part of building the case. I was called upon to be a part of why is it important to have social-emotional supports for young people in high schools? So I have been I've been about this case from the beginning. So to be in this position now where it's kind of coming back where I'm now going to have my funding cut at my school where I have been already serving this kids, it's tough.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I want to bring in another listener comment. Valerie emailed us this morning to say her son went to charter school and she loved it because it was small. Her son wasn't interested in sports and had specialized interests he was able to focus on. She says she understands the problems with charter schools, but she's grateful for the alternative, at least for her son. Let's go to a quick break. Remember, the number to call in this morning is 277-5866, or you can tweet the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. This is 89.9 KUNM. We'll be back in a minute.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Representing Native American tribes, people facing criminal charges, civil rights plaintiffs, and victims of sexual abuse. Info at RothsteinLaw.com. Support provided by the Water Authority, offering a series of Water Smart Gardening workshops. Seed starting is the topic this Saturday, 9 to 11 a.m. at the Albuquerque Academy's Desert Oasis Teaching Garden. No reservations needed. Info at abcwua.org.
Every day, all around the world, this centuries-old art form is thriving. Classical music is made new with fresh interpretations of the great works and with groundbreaking premieres. There's a literal world of creativity to be discovered and shared. I'm Fred Child. Join me for the best from concert halls around the globe on APM's Performance Today.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. Our focus today, charter schools and the complicated roles they play in our public education system. Give us a call, 277-5866. I want to take a listener call because our phone lines are filling up this morning. Ed from Santa Fe, what did you want to add to the conversation?
Thank you for having me on, Hannah. I guess the essential question for me is, why is the big pushback against charter schools right now when they're actually schools of choice? Parents are sending their children there because they believe it's a viable alternative to the traditional public school. And one of the things that I hear frequently against charters is that they're draining money from the traditional public schools, but they are public schools, and state law requires them to have the same administrative capacity as an entire school district.
Thanks for that, Ed. I want to welcome Representative Christine Trujillo on the line from the Roundhouse, I imagine. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being on the program. If you heard Ed's comment there, it was, you know, not understanding why there's a pushback against charter schools because they are public schools and they get funded in much the same way. Do you have a response to that idea?
If he's referring to the charter school moratorium, the issue is that the charter school moratorium will simply give us a pause for 2 years for this new administration to come in and visit with all the existing charter schools, make sure everything is going well and in compliance, and making sure that their findings are up to par, making sure that they track positive academic performance and making sure that we use those schools' best practices to use everywhere else. I guess it can be perceived as pushback, but for my bill, the charter school bill, it's simply a moratorium for 2 years. Sunsets after 2 years, and existing charter schools will not be affected. They continue to go forward with their programs. There isn't an issue against charter schools. It's an issue of making sure that there's consistency in the oversight, that there's consistency in the planning and making sure. I know that there are 18, if I'm not mistaken, I think 18 schools in the queue to start their programs. So they would be waiting until the 2 years are up, and then they would be back in line with their charter school program. The other issue is, Gordon Burnell, for example, is a charter school that addresses the needs of young adults, and we're trying to make sure that Gordon Brunel isn't shut down. And right now in House Bill 2, in House Bill 5, the language in the bill says that Gordon Burnell and schools like Gordon Burnell's that work with young adults, 22 and older, will no longer have the capacity to do that. They'd have to use funding from a two-year college to get adult education, GEDs, but it's not really a GED. You know what I'm talking about? Equivalency.
So just to clarify, we're talking about a couple different bills in the legislature that you, Representative Trujillo, are a part of sponsoring. So HB5, the big education bill. Are you saying that there's been an amendment to do with that school age limit recently? Is there a new development?
I dropped that amendment yesterday. There was a lot of debate, and there were a lot of people in the audience testifying in support of my amendment to keep Gordon Burnell and schools like Gordon Burnell open because they address a specific need. And I believe and many other colleagues believe that they are important to keep open. Regarding the charter school moratorium, again, it's not about being anti-charter school. It's about making sure we have an assessment of all of them, bringing them up to compliance, and making sure that the new PED administration has information that is important to ensure that they keep moving forward.
We have Jackie Baldwin in the studio this morning, principal of Siembra Leadership High School. And I know, Jackie, that school age limit was a concern for you, too. What are you thinking now that you're hearing about this amendment?
I'm very pleased to hear that this amendment happened yesterday. But I think my bigger concern that I'd like to address with Representative Trujillo is the reasoning behind the phase out of the small school adjustment, because that adjustment is very much hurting the young people that the Yazzie case has set out to protect. I can also say that I can picture right now a handful of young men that come from one of the schools in Representative Trujillo's district. They were not doing well at that larger high school there, and they're thriving over at Siembra. So this directly affects those young men. So my focus is more on the small school adjustment, in addition to the cap on the age.
Representative Trujillo, that small school size adjustment is also in that omnibus bill. How are you balancing those concerns from some of the charter schools about that small school size funding?
The small school adjustment was created for actual small schools, for the traditional schools in rural communities that did not have the capacity to bring enough money in on their own to teach those kids. Throughout the eight-year administration of the Martinez administration, there was an effort to allow charter schools to also be considered for that small school adjustment. I'm not totally against that, but I understand where other traditional schools are coming from. I have mixed.
We seem to have lost you, Representative Trujillo. We'll come back to you in a minute. I want to take a couple listener calls. Michael has called in from Albuquerque. You're on the air. What would you like to add? All right. Jackie Baldwin here from Siembra Leadership High School, as an organization that's trying to serve mostly kids in the state, who the state would refer to in their formula as at risk, mm-hmm. right? What kind of support would be most helpful, either from APS or from the state?
I think that the leadership schools, so Siembra, ACE Leadership, Tech Leadership, Health Leadership, we have this beautiful formula. We have this model, this three-pillar model that encompasses community engagement, student support, and project-based learning. And we say that our young people are the key to economic development. And we're saying if we are targeting young people that aren't successful in traditional schools. And we know that if young people are not graduating, that between the ages of 21 to 25, that about half of them are unemployed. We can't afford to not have schools like ours, right? We can't afford to have this larger problem in the state and the city. So I think the support that I'd like from legislators and the support that I'd like from the district is to let us do what we've already been doing, and that's helping the kids that need it the most.
Thanks for that. Tyler is on the line from Albuquerque. Tyler, what would you like to bring to the conversation?
Yes, I'm a teacher at the Native American Community Academy. I've been here for about 4 years, and I'd like to echo the same sentiments from the representatives from the leadership schools. The Yazzie case has just shown that the public school system hasn't met the needs of, well, how the state would say, at-risk youth, but indigenous youth. In schools like NACA and Siembras and South Valley Academy, they're targeting these students that are often forgotten, neglected, not considered in the state funding model. And while I recognize that we are, quote-unquote, taking students from public schools, I think what is often missed is that our schools are using models of education that are more helpful and supportive for the students that need this kind of support. NACA employs a wellness model in which we address different components of a student's wellness, physical, mental, social, emotional, and spiritual. And most APS schools do not acknowledge that, don't recognize that, and don't appreciate that. And I think I would hope that the state would consider looking at schools like NACA and the other schools and realizing that they are doing exactly what the Yazzie case was aimed to protect, is supporting these youth through development, through identity and wellness. And I would love to see the state support that rather than push back and consider how we are a hindrance to the public school system instead of being a supportive model for them.
Tyler, thanks for calling in. Roger on the line from Taos, I believe. Roger, good morning.
Hello.
Hi, Roger. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Thank you very much for taking my call. And I'm up here in Taos, where we've had, by and large, a generally very positive charter school experience. Specifically, I'm one of the founders of the Taos Municipal Charter School.
All right, Roger, I'm so sorry. We lost you there. I couldn't hear you anymore. Jillian calling from Santa Fe. Jillian, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi, what would you like to add?
So I'm a single mom. My husband passed away, and my son is at ATC. And I just want to say, like, it's been a positive
experience. I'm sorry, what is ATC?
It's Arts, Technology, and the Classics.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, go on. Yeah.
And it's in Santa Fe. And they have very high expectations for the students. And it's a lottery, so they pull from all over Santa Fe. So you get a mix of students. And I just wanted to comment because one of the people who emailed in said that they don't, they kind of throw away kids that don't kind of make it. But that's not true because my son was having incredible difficulties in the beginning. And I got several calls from the school. And I went in and had several parent meetings, and it's been a really positive experience. And I feel like the public schools need to use the charter schools as a model. And I think pulling from all walks of life, so from all over Santa Fe, different economical classes, and it's really a great model, I feel. And, you know, taking from it is not a good thing. And also the smaller school, I feel, is a really positive thing rather than having these huge schools. That's all I wanted to add.
Thanks for that, Jillian. Follow up for you. One critique that you hear is that, okay, if a parent sees a better option for their particular child, you know, sometimes the only way to get their kid to that school is, you know, if you have the extra time or maybe extra gas money to drive your child if there's not busing available. what do you think it would take to make charters like as accessible to all families, like you're saying, to lower income families, especially to make charters as accessible as, like, say, your neighborhood public school?
Yeah. Well, so I'm a working mom, and so I don't have the time. And so I have to drop my kids off first thing, and the school starts at 9 a.m. So the school is open earlier. There's just, you know, administrative people there and that. So I drop my son off, and he does his homework, and then I go to work. So it's, I mean, I feel like, and it's as accessible as public, you know, any other public school. I mean the hours, and I pick my son up. Some days I have to pick him up after five because I'm working. And so he just stays at school and does his homework. You know, it's, I mean, I don't feel like there's any difference in terms of, if he went to a public school. So.
So it's all about those before and after school options for you.
Yeah, and he's in after school activities, like, you know, he does the chess, and they have track and field, and, you know, there's things that you can do after school, too. But it's just the same as any other public school for a working parent.
Thank you so much, Jillian. Let's go to Julie Ann calling from Española. Julie Ann?
Hi, thank you for having me. I serve on a charter school in Española. I'm the governing council president, and, you know, I guess what I'm concerned about is the comment that we're pulling monies from public schools, and we take a lot of the at-risk youth because parents choose that. The school has to provide something outside of what traditional schools can provide for students and be successful. So when you have this large at-risk population, and you have an administrator who is serving all the roles of, you know, the larger districts, like, you know, the Española Public School, and they're wearing those hats, and they're doing all of the same things, and we're being held to that same standard, you know, and we're succeeding, then I don't understand what the problem is. In addition to that, you know, we have board members that serve, you know, not for pay. We're not elected. We volunteer to do this because it's something that, you know, we're all passionate about, and we believe that this is something that we, the kids, deserve. And so I guess I ask the question, if we're succeeding, what is the issue? Why the questions,
thanks.
I guess I don't understand.
Okay. Thanks so much for calling, Julianne. Alan from Albuquerque. Welcome to the program, Alan.
Also, I taught at the Gordon Brunel School at the prison on the west side, and I totally give it accolades for doing the work that they're doing under pretty stressful circumstances, and so that's good. But I have come to the conclusion that I was on the board of the first charter school in New Mexico, so. New Mexico Community Charter School on Washington and Central there. Anyway, I think that the money should go to public education. That's what I think. I do. I think that there's downsides regardless of what your position is. But I think that it's much more public schools are much more richer, I for want of a better word. The statistics that unless they were really skewed, statistics indicate that charter schools don't do any better than public high schools or public schools.
That is true. That's what, based on our analysis of PED data, that across the board, basically, proficiency in traditional public schools and charter public schools is about the same. So I want to back you up on that stat. But Alan, let me ask you, we have people saying, you know, charters are public schools. Like, how can you say resources should go to traditional public schools when charters are public schools? I mean, what's the distinction, or what's the concern that you really have about the resources going to charter schools, Alan?
Well, like it's the community charter school that I just mentioned that we started first in New Mexico, I don't say that this is a wholesale trip, but they do, they get rid of people to bring their grade averages up for each of the students. I mean, they do. I mean, I don't know is it an epidemic or not, but there's an elitism that develops with not all charter. I'm sure not all charter schools, but there's a kind of classism too. And you know, the product of a school, say in the South Valley, that's based on a lot of community input and stuff like that, is much richer and holistic. Dare I use the word community? And I think that that's what we need to do. I think we need to concentrate on pouring all the resources that we need into all the public schools, and just go that way.
Alan, thanks for your comments. I want to put that to our in-studio guest here, Jackie Baldwin of Sambre Leadership High School. Do you see that danger of charter schools becoming elitist?
I absolutely do not see a danger of public schools becoming elitist.
Or charter schools, sorry, we should say, yeah. Charter schools.
Public charter schools. So I'm hearing the comment from the caller that formerly worked at Gordon Brunel, and he's saying the first charter school that ever opened in Albuquerque. So yes, it's a charter, but I don't know where there's this misconception that charter schools are not public. Anybody in the state can come into my school, put in a lottery application. Right. So it's a very public school. There's no charge to it. Anybody can go there. And this idea about my big issue is that these conversations turn into charter, pro charter, against charter, or they turn into conversations about budget and money. My big problem is that these conversations are not student centered. And that's the problem. And if we're being adult-centered, finance-centered, charter against charter, for charter-centered, we are losing what we are supposed to be doing, and that is serving kids. And I want to go back again and say the young people that I'm serving is a very, very special demographic in the city, right? Even if we're just talking about special ed students, I believe that the state average is about 11% of special ed students at a school. I have 20 to 25% special ed students at my school. I have a very, very special mix, right? We're a charter, but we're certainly public.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. I'm Hannah Colton. We're talking this morning about charter schools. You can email letstalk@kunm.org. Let's go to break. You're listening to KUNM 89.9. Back in a minute.
It's the season of love. If you love KUNM and couldn't imagine life in New Mexico without it, now is a good time to support what you love by donating that unwanted car or truck. Maybe you're no longer driving it, or maybe you just need more room in your driveway. Either way, donating it to KUNM is a great way to show your love. To find out if your vehicle qualifies, call 888-KUNM. Car. That's 888-586-6227.
Next time you lace up your running shoes, don't forget to take KUNM with you. Our new mobile app has live streaming, our two-week archive, podcasts, and much more to keep you company on your run. Search KUNM in the Apple App Store or Google Play and download today.
KUNM thanks Independent Vehicle Service for its support, just because it's good to have an independent dealership alternative. On the web at ivsabq.com.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Hannah Colton. Our focus today is charter schools. And I want to take another listener call from Española. Karen is on the line. Good morning, Karen.
We don't have another state, so
we're close. Karen, can you hear me? Karen, are you on the line?
Yes.
All right. Yeah, thanks so much for calling in. What did you want to add?
I wanted to say I have a son who was in a charter school, a couple of charter schools, actually. We live up in Española. And the biggest disappointment that I found with the charter school, and I'm not going to say this is all charter schools. This was was that there was no. It was a great charter, but they never lived up to the charter. And so maybe the oversight of charter schools needs a lot more work to ensure that the charter is being fulfilled for these kids. You know, they have expectations when they go to a set school. This was an arts and sciences, purported to be an arts and sciences charter school. And these kids, they got art one day a week. And one afternoon a week, and they didn't even get science daily. So the expectation was that it was going to be different, you know, that it was going to serve these kids that are, you know, excel in those areas perhaps. And my son's also a special needs student, and he's, I guess, what you'd call double exceptional, twice exceptional, I think. So he needed a lot more help in some areas, and he was excelling in other areas. And we're really doing a disservice to the kids in not overseeing that these charters are fulfilled. And I don't know how to fix that, but it was, you know, he's not there anymore. And I have friends who had kids there, and they had the same sort of experience. And it's, you know, we're doing a disservice to New Mexico's kids, and education is essential, you know, what they need to grow and be great citizens and lead the state eventually. So
thank you for that call, Karen. I want to put that idea to our state representative on the line, Christine Trujillo, on the line from Santa Fe this morning. So two big ideas, you know, how to keep the students at the center of this conversation, and then also how to provide that oversight and accountability if a school is not living up to its charter. Representative Trujillo, what do you think?
Well, that's why my moratorium, I think, needs to be in place. It provides, the new public education department and its charter school division an opportunity to really go statewide and assess all the charter schools in a meaningful way. I know that the PEC, the Public Education Commission, has been able to do some of that. But I've heard that it's been very spotty, and I know that they're involved in accepting the charter memberships and making sure that what they believe in charters that are not meeting certain criteria are not accepted. But it's again, in my opinion, spotty. I think that the PED's charter school division should be given that 2-year time frame to really do what it's supposed to do in terms of assessing all those charter schools and ensuring that the good ones, the productive ones, the ones that are really getting positive educational outcomes for kids are stay open, and the ones that are run haphazardly shut down. And that's all it does.
Okay, thanks so much for being on the program, Representative Trujillo. Patricia Gibson is the chair of the PEC, also on the line. Patricia, what do you think about that? I mean, what the PEC has this huge task of managing all these state-chartered schools from, you know, the boardroom in Santa Fe. What is the PEC doing well? Where does it have room to improve?
Well, let me just assure you that the monitoring of the schools doesn't just happen from a boardroom in Santa Fe, and it's disconcerting that we hear part of the narrative that the oversight of the schools has been spotty. It is not the authority of PED or CSD to open and or close any schools. That falls completely within the purview of the PEC, and we have worked very, very hard at establishing a monitoring tools that is carried out by the staff of this charter school division that is part of PED. And they go out to every charter school, at the very least once a year, new charter schools at the very least twice a year, to speak to the caller's comment. One of the first questions that the charter school division asks in the site visit protocol is, how are you going to show us that you are fulfilling your mission? But there is a process for the monitoring of all of the schools. The reports come back not only to the schools for review, but also to the PEC. And we have a very rigorous accountability ladder so that schools are held accountable throughout the school year for fulfilling their missions and making sure that they are doing everything that they are supposed to do to meet the needs of the public school students that they are tasked with taking care of.
That accountability is a huge task. Thank you so much for being on the program, Patricia. I want to welcome onto the program Dr. Ara Wilkinson from Jemez Pueblo, principal of Walatoa High Charter School. Good morning, Dr. Wilkinson.
Morning.
Hi. Can you tell us about the role that Walatoa High plays in the community there? What is your school like?
Well, you know, our school, we're a rural public charter school here on the Jemez Pueblo Reservation. And we also serve students from Pueblo of Zia, Pueblo of Santo Domingo, students from Bernalillo and the Jemez Valley corridor, and students that parents work in the health department. We have the opportunity, they've brought their students to our school and being able to educate them. And, you know, we operate as a community school model, and we have partners that we utilize the CNM and IAI and SIPI and the Health and Human Services here to really be able to provide a model that brings the not the community to the school, but the school back to the community. So we're able to utilize all those services to be able to make a positive academic and also social outcome for our students here at Walatoa.
And Walatoa High has had its charter renewed by the state somewhat recently, right? Like last year?
We've had it. We were a district charter, and then we became a state charter in 2011, and then we had our charter renewed twice, and we have been recently renewed in our negotiated contract with the PEC past year.
And what do you appreciate about the accountability process with the state? I mean, what has that been like being a state chartered school?
Well, you know, going back on the comment from the representative that and the moratorium on the charters as far as the lack of accountability. You know, I sat in front of the PEC and have defended and provided data that shows that we have shown improvement. You know, the misconception is that we have to show academic gain no matter what. And, you know, it's based on, you know, back these past 5 years, and it may change, is that on one assessment. And without showing academic gain, you know, we have to do that, and all charters have to provide these data. If not, we are we may shut down, you know, and which no traditional public school has to go through the same accountability measures that the PEC has provided. So, and, you know, we've experienced on that on our end, but also, too, it forces our school and our staff to look at different ways and how to keep kids in school and how to educate them. And so, you know, being on this that end of accountability, we are a public charter school. We have to follow every NMPED requirement financially, academically, and also in addition to the PEC requirements as far as are we fulfilling our charter for our community. So, you know, that accountability measures for all charters is almost twice as much compared to a traditional public school. I wish that traditional public schools were held as accountable as our charter schools are.
And what can Walletoa High offer as a charter school that it couldn't necessarily in a traditional public school setting?
Well, you know, we're an option. We're an option for parents, and we're an option, you know, just like the traditional public school is an option. We're able, because of our small numbers and things like that, and our aggressive dual credit and college and career program, you know, we're able to move with a student. We're able to, if a kid needs more or less or whatever they need, we're small enough that we can move and develop an academic program for this child. So, you know, being a charter, we're able to move easier compared to a bigger school. You know, a bigger school becomes more difficult. But being able to offer individualized academic plans for these students and really being able to get into the community and building on what the community values here in the Pueblo of Jemez or just like any other school, being able to provide that unique, because every charter is unique, and they're able to move with a student more fluidly than a bigger school could.
I see. Thank you. Let's go to the phone lines. Amy is on the line from Española. Amy, good morning. What would you like to add?
Good morning. Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'm a parent and PTA member of La Tierra Montessori Charter School here in Española. I just also wanted to echo that our school, which is also a small school, would be really hit hard by if there was a phase out of the small school adjustment. We also serve students. A large percent of our students are English language learners and have IEPs. And it would really affect our ability to serve the kids in our community. And, you know, Española is a community that's really struggling, with violence and all kinds of community issues. And that affects, you know, it definitely permeates through the school systems. And I think having an option for kids in our valley is really critical. Having a place that's a safe place and a place that's really child student centered is I think an important consideration for Española.
All right, Amy, thanks so much. Coming to the end of the hour, I do want to get another caller in. Kira from Santa Fe. We don't have much time, but what would you like to add?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just want to point to the history of compulsory education, and I appreciate much of what's been said. And the fact that compulsory education was based in the U.S. was based on a Prussian military model. And, you know, we have to look at the systemic residue, and the notion that charter schools exacerbate inequalities is, I think, the wrong debate and the wrong conversation, because charter schools were, in fact, a response to the inequalities inherent in the public education system. And we do have to keep it student-centered. And I think the right debate and the appropriate debate, and I'm going to point to Gordon Burnell Charter School as a really profound and important example, because they are on the chopping block right now if HB5 goes ahead with this age cap, that the appropriate response for lawmakers in this state is to say, wow, this is an incredible model. How can we support these teachers and this school? How can we make this a national model for excellence? How can we hold up what's happening in New Mexico across the country? And that's the appropriate response, not scapegoating and not pitting charter schools against public schools. Charter schools are public schools.
All right, Kira, thanks so much. That's the end of our hour. Thank you so much to everyone who called in. The lines were full the whole hour, and we're sorry we couldn't get to all of those calls. Conversations can and should continue online. You can check out our Facebook page and comment there, or email us at letstalk@kunm.org, and we always try to follow up. Thank you to our guests, Jackie Baldwin here in the studio, Errol Wilkinson from calling from Jemez Pueblo, Patricia Gibson, Danielle Johnston, and Christine Trujillo. If you missed part of today's show, you can listen on KUNM.org or subscribe to our podcast via iTunes. Next time on Let's Talk New Mexico, we'll look at the state's pension systems and how they're doing. That's next Thursday morning at 8. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Celia Rainey live-tweeted. Kaveh Movahed screened your calls. Marisa DeMarco produced the show today. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. And I'm Hannah Colton. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.